You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new edition of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. I hope you've all been well. I hope you've been looking after each other. Thank you for the enormous amount of feedback we had on last week's show with the one, the only, Mr. Martin Nonu. An absolute pleasure to roll with an All Black legend for an hour and a half or so. And unbelievably, the hot guests just keep on coming. Thick and fast. I'm afraid I'm not referring to you this week, Tins, but it is the Scotland captain. 71 tests, two Lions tours, and one of the most electrifying players in the game at the moment. Hello, Mr. Mustard himself, Stuart Hogg. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Alex. How are you guys?
Yeah, I think we're living the dream, more or less. You're looking very schwef. You're looking very well. What's happening down southwest?
Yeah, just enjoying life. It's good to have some sun for a change. Obviously, being brought up in Scotland, we don't get much of it. But since moving to Devon, we've had a fair amount of it. So, yeah, really, really enjoying it.
Can we just talk about the hair? I was playing golf with you last year at the Celtic Manor when you had a shaved head and it was looking very red, scabby and sore. And obviously you and Danny got together and got a 2-for-1, right? And I feel sorry for the poor child who lost a hamster for that lick. Can we talk about it? Because you've gone from short to now, it's just out of control. And Danny Kerr's like, oh, maybe I should cut it, the new lid. The guy who's only ever had a high and tight. Now look at you. Look at it. It's waving. Synthetic strand is standing on end, but...
I will be honest, yours is very, very good. I mean, you look well on it.
Yeah, I've struggled over the last kind of few years. I've always said that it's my wife Gillian's fault. I had a full head of hair until I met her. So
I was going to say, is it Gillian's hair? I was going to say, that's true love.
Oh, look, I had a little bit of work done a couple of years ago. Tins and I played a golf tournament and I was telling them all about the fact I was going to get it done on the Monday. So... yeah, I tried to keep it quiet for about a year, and then people obviously realised I went from having the worst in the hairline to a hell of a good lid straight away, and then decided to dye it bleach blonde and ruin it all. So I might have had another little bit done just prior to Christmas last year. So yeah, obviously with no barbers or hairdressers being open during lockdown, it's allowed a lot of time for it to grow. So yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's taken me from about a 4.5 out of 10 to maybe a 6 out of 10. So
generous.
Back yourself.
I was going to say, technology's come on leaps and bounds. Maybe I've got a chance. You know what I mean? If they can put this back, it'd be amazing.
I think we'll file that under lost cause, Tins. You know, I think the moment's been and gone. Unless Gillian's got any going spare, in which case she may well be happy to help out. What is the connection, Stuart, between the two of you?
I think it was one of the first times we met was probably Celtic Manor, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And is that the All-Stars golf thing or just having a bit of a putt?
2014 was the first time I played in it. And I think that was about the time that maybe just discovered Jager bombs on the Friday night and didn't quite perform well on the Saturday morning for some reason. But yeah, it was about one of the first times I came across Mike. And yeah, we just seemed to catch up every now and then at various events, and obviously good to see him for a beer or two every now and then.
Good. Yeah. Your wedding along the way as well, I gather.
Yeah. Rory's wedding as well. I mean, it's generally whenever we catch up, it is beer in hand, fully chewing the cud, but we both like a beer, so it ends up being a really good night.
Good.
So a bit of Scottish dancing at Rory's wedding as well. So even though none of the Scots knew how to reel, my wife was like, I know how to reel more than them. I'm like, you're probably an exception to the rule, my love. And a lot of fun. Generally, a lot of fun is had, A, at the Celtic Manor, but then B, with Hoggy's presence, because he's a good lad.
Well, it's very nice to reunite the two of you and to sort of have a bit of a chinwaggery. There are so many things, Stuart, that we'd love to chat about. I've got a couple of things I want to clear up before we get too into the rugby. Are you still a squib, which is a wizard with no magical powers masquerading as a muggle, as J.K. Rowling wrote?
Yeah, I got a bit of a banter on the back of that, actually.
I've got no idea what this means.
I think it was Big Jim Hamilton, Kelly Brown and myself.
Yeah, she said that you, Kelly Brown and Jim Hamilton were all squibs, and when asked why, you specifically, she said you didn't need to give a reason for the suspicion, simply saying enough said. Have you met J.K. Rowling before? Is this a sort of Scottish?
Yeah, a huge fan of Scottish rugby, and seems to be around a fair bit at the after-match function. So yeah, I have been fortunate to meet her a couple of times, and she's great value. I think the last time I saw her was maybe Italy 2018. She came at the after-match and had a few drinks with the boys, and now we had a good bit of banter there. It was good fun.
Are you a Harry Potter fan or not?
Yeah, I remember watching them with my auntie. Used to take me to every single film when it was released, when I was a lot younger, obviously. So I can't say I've read the books, either through pure laziness or the fact that I cannot read. You decide.
We should have a catch up with JK and put her rugby knowledge to the test at some point. Welcome her to the Good, the Bad and the Rugby.
She was at the horrendous England Scotland game this year as well. I had dinner with her after, actually.
Oh, did you?
Yes. Obviously, I was gloating, but it was not the greatest spectacle of a game, was it, in the monsoon?
You're very
welcome. That's definitely bad for the lid. That's what you were like, yeah, sorry, is that running into your contract now? If it's raining that badly and windy, I can't risk it, sorry.
It was just literally done just a month or so before that as well. So.
If it stood the test of those winds, you know you had a good
firm fixing. Someone's dropped anchor. So there are so many things I want to chat to you about. I actually want to start, given the poster boy of Scottish rugby, with a really interesting article that was written this week by Alan Dimmock about whether or not rugby needs a sort of global superstar right now. And there's some fascinating sort of depth to the article, all about sort of Messi, LeBron, Serena, Tiger Woods, and just how they transcend the sport. Come to you first of all, Hoggy, just on your role in Scottish rugby. Is the role of the poster boy something you're comfortable with, something you've gone after, something you've been given? How does it sit with you to be the icon at the moment?
I think if you asked me when I was 19, 20, all I wanted to do was to be in the spotlight and try and be in a poster boy. Whereas you ask me nowadays, I'd rather just sit back and concentrate on the rugby. I think, you know, old enough and ugly enough now to realise that if things are going well on the field, then, you know, you tend to be used off it a lot more. So for me, look, I just want to work hard, make sure I'm doing my job, and any added extras come with it. But definitely nowadays, I'd rather just kind of hide away. But with this lid, I might come back into it. You never know.
That is really, it's a wonderful media handbook answer, that. It's all about the team, it's not about me. I'm going to push you a bit more on it, though. I mean, when you were a young kid coming through, how intoxicating was it to be front and centre?
Yeah, I think when you're that age, you're just full of confidence and you think that, you know, you can take on the world. I think, you know, I was kind of front and centre of the kind of, you know, advertising for Scottish rugby. Or, yeah, I think, you know, back then I was chuffed to be a part of it. I wanted to be it. I wanted to, you know, if I wasn't involved in a photo shoot for the kit launch, I was disappointed. Whereas now you kind of, you just see it as part of the job. You're used as, you know, at the end of the day, it's a business, you know, at the club and the country, it's still a business that you've got to be used in a certain way to be able to help sell jerseys, to be able to help, you know, we're packing out stadiums, we're playing well, and all the added extras that come with it. You just got to kind of take it on the chin and get on with it, I guess, because it is a business as well as playing rugby.
We had a chat at Rory's, because at Rory's wedding, you were sort of leaving Glasgow and you were looking at what clubs you were going to. And you said to me that you hated rugby at the time. You hated the fact that you felt there was so much expectation on your shoulders that you actually hated going out there.
I did. And I was, you know, if I was 31, 32 at the time, I'd have quite happily just walked away from the game because I didn't enjoy it at all. I was at the stage that a couple of years prior to that, I was playing some of the best rugby I'd ever played. Got picked to go on the Lions Tour in 2017. And then that injury kind of rocked me. It really did. Like, I fractured my eye socket. I had my shoulder reconstructed when I came back. And then I decided that, you know, I had to lose a lot of weight. I had to try and add a different aspect to my game. I was just trying to be too lean, trying to be too light, picking up loads of injuries. I was spending more time on the physio bed than I was the training field. You know, I think I played 10 games for Scotland and about 6 for Glasgow for 2 years consecutively. So I was thinking to myself, you know, all the kind of stuff that was coming on the back of it, is Stuart Hogg going to get back to his best? And I was like, I'm going to, you know, prove the doubters wrong. And was probably making twice as many mistakes because I was trying too hard. And I just got to the stage, I was getting a lot of stick off the pitch and just wasn't enjoying it. I didn't feel comfy in my surroundings at Glasgow. As I say, if I was 31, 32, I'd have quite happily just walked away.
That's extraordinary. I really want to pick up on that. Can I just ask, Tins or Stuart, which one of you's got the kid that's not enjoying bath time very much?
Mine's silent.
Can you hear them?
And I wonder why you didn't retire at 27, and when you wonder why you very quickly got back to the clubhouse.
No wonder you built that. You became one of the lockdown gymmers. I'm just going for a session. Where? Doesn't
see,
matter.
See you on Thursday.
Yeah, 4 hours later.
But that's really interesting to pick up on that, that someone as high profile and as talented and as front and centre as you are genuinely thought, I don't actually love what I'm doing right now. How did you rediscover the love?
In all honesty, Jill and I talked for a long time about what we were going to do in terms of like the next stage. Because I said, if I was to stay at Glasgow again, it would be one last contract and I'm done. I said, I'm not going to do it again. Like, it's, I got to the stage, I just had enough. And I felt the time was right to move on and try again, because I'm not scared to say I'm obsessed with playing rugby. I'm obsessed with everything that comes with playing rugby. But I got to the stage, I just didn't want to do it. A few hard conversations with my parents. I had a really, really good conversation with Tins about it. And I said that, you know, I had a chance to either go to Exeter or Montpellier at the time. And he turned around to me straight away and said, there's only one club for you to go to. And that was when we decided that, you know, I had a big inkling that I was going to be going to Exeter. And I had a few conversations with numerous different people. And that was the kind of time I thought, you know, Tins knows exactly what he's talking about. He's a man that's got a fair amount of experience. So I was like, you know, I listened to him and I said to Jill, I said, I think you could be right, you know. And thankfully, I decided to listen to him. And that, you know, that's a massive part of why I'm here. And I probably never told Tins that, but, you know, it's a big part of why I'm here.
Nothing like a barroom chat at Rory Lawson's wedding to sort out your career. I dread to think where you could have ended up if you'd been listening to him.
It was a weird chat because it was not something I expected. I watch Hoggy in awe when he plays, just to how he backs himself. You know, he sees things that other people don't see. He'll chip and chase when you'd want your fullback to play safe, but it always comes up for him. And then to hear him sort of, he wasn't really enjoying the game. He felt all this pressure. And I was like, well, you need an environment where you're going to thrive and not. And in France, you're just going to get flogged was the main sell. Whereas you hear so many good things. And having been when I went down and played for, I always use this example, played for Exeter in Gareth Steenson's testimonial. I was like, it's just a great club, great atmosphere. They will want you to do what you want to do. They want to play and then play with smiles on faces. And if you're feeling like this now, you need a club like that.
I find it fascinating that someone who's at the top of their game, you know, has gone through a period where you haven't enjoyed it at all. I want to come on to all things Exeter and all things Scotland, but I do want to just develop this thought around, you know, rugby's search for a global superstar, which was Al's article in Rugby World. In your view, Stuart, who is the biggest star in the game right now? And you're welcome to say yourself, but, you know, how many genuine global superstars do you think rugby's got right now?
There's a fair amount. I think you've just got to look at the World Cup. You know, I always look at the likes of, you know, Owen Farrell. I think he's, you know, a massive name in rugby. Maro Itoje, Henry Slade, Jack Noel, massive names in rugby. To be able to pinpoint one, I think, would be very, very difficult. Every single player is different. Like, you know, you get forwards that could be, you know, the global star, or, you know, somebody might say it's going to be a back. Everybody's completely different. So to be able to pinpoint somebody, I reckon, would be bloody difficult, and I wouldn't like to try it, if I'm honest.
Tins, I'm going to ask you the same question. You played against Jonah, who is always held up as the whale amongst, you know, rugby fish, as it were. That's a terrible metaphor, but you know what I mean. And you played alongside Johnny, who was arguably England's highest profile rugby player. Where is rugby at the moment in its search for a global superstar?
It's a tricky one, because if you look at it, you'd say Bowden, Barrett would definitely be up there. But again, if you're comparing it to the likes of Lomu and Johnny, obviously Dan Carter was up there in terms of just what they achieved on the pitch. But then have the next level behind that. I don't know whether you've got anyone at that those levels yet, but that's them further down their journey possibly than a lot of the kids at the top of their game are now. So I don't know whether that's going to change and they're going to keep building. Like, if Bowden Barrett keeps calling, obviously Geordie Barrett, McKenzie, but as Hoggy said, there's obviously Hoggy in terms of you want that excitement with a player, or you need something that's going to catch that hook. But I think we've got great players throughout the world, but then I think what you're talking about is that next level rugby icon that sort of brings the game into the media space. I don't think there's anyone sort of, since Richie and Dan Carter retired, has anyone stepped up there? Yes, you could say Faz, but because he brings both sides of being an amazing professional, but the controversies that he brings with his high tackles and with everyone moaning about his tackle technique, he sort of bridges that across. But is that someone who sells shoes? Then no, not really.
What's really interesting about that is the people you've mentioned there. So Richie's got no interest in the limelight, had no interest in the limelight, and had no real interest in anything other than being the best in his position. Johnny was never interested in the limelight. Stuart, you were saying that you were front and centre and actually you're quite happy to give it away. I'm just going to hit you with a couple of Instagram followers. It's not the be-all and the end-all, but it's quite indicative. So Khaleesi, Sia Khaleesi, who lifted the World Cup, has got 500,000. Carter's got 1 million. And then you go to someone like LeBron, who's got 72 million. And Ronaldo's got 238 million. And even, God bless him, our very own Hask has got 500,000. I mean, it's... and working very hard on it as well, I might say.
Yeah.
It's... I mean,
what you've said there... Dan Carter doesn't do a massive amount on his social media.
But he's more open to it and more interested in it than most. And I suppose the question is rugby as a sport guilty of the tall poppy syndrome, whereby you don't want people stepping outside the team boundaries? And is that a problem for the game commercially, or is that what makes rugby rugby and therefore, you know, it will always be about the team?
Well, it's just the size of the sport. Football is a very hard thing to compare it with, because we're nowhere near that level of...
But it's chicken and egg, because it's about the size of the sport, but the sport doesn't grow unless people have got people to buy into. The fans have got people to buy into. And you could say Owen is a classic example of England captain who's got no interest, rightly or wrongly, in anything outside the team environment. He's got the world at his feet and is hugely marketable, but doesn't really have any interest in it.
So what you're saying is Hoggy should be on the Get Your Hair Sorted ads with Shane
Warne. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that there are opportunities to build greater characters in the sport. It's like the old Sky Sports News test. You know, everyone watches Sky Sports News and keeps it on mute. Who do you reach for to turn the remote up to listen to in rugby?
I don't know. Answer that. Genuine.
But I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just challenging. You know, the point of this article and the headline is, does rugby need a superstar name to challenge the global market?
I think if you said, who do you turn it up for? Farrell would be one. Khaleesi would be another.
I'm going to completely disagree with you. I think Owen is an unbelievable rugby player and captain, but he gives absolutely nothing in the media whatsoever. He is the one guy who I would not turn it up for, because he knows how to play the game and shuts everything down.
Okay. Not because of how he plays, because people are interested in what goes on with him, and it's normally around a little bit.
He's not interested in that element, and therefore gives nothing.
Yeah, no, he doesn't.
I think he's the master of turning it down.
If he turned it up and wanted to actually get out there and do stuff, he would go massively stratospheric, because I think everyone would see what a good bloke he is behind it, whereas they don't really get to see that now. He's still, people are very interested because he divides people about his controversial tackle technique and everything like that. If you do follow Khaleesi on Instagram, he is very entertaining. Some of the stuff that he does and some of the tracksuits he wears are just ridiculous. And I think his journey, and he's going to embrace it. I think he'll only go bigger. He's with Roc Nation. I think he will be brilliant for the game, because he'll become appealing to people who don't necessarily watch the game. And that's what we need to do to grow the game.
Yeah.
I would sometimes say that rugby players are potentially reserved in what they're going to do at times because of the kind of backlash that can come with it. Sometimes,
but this is exactly the point. What is the backlash that you get?
Oh, there's loads of different things. You know, you could say one thing in the press that could set you up for failure. And that's what the problem nowadays is, that yes, we are all media trained and we have to say this, that and other, because we don't want to add any pressure to ourselves or to the team or to club or country, whatever it may be. And if you go one little bit out of line, you can get your arse handed to it for in numerous different ways. Like, you could be set up to fail, and that's the last thing that boys want. The added pressure is, there's enough on it. There's enough on yourself, on the team, that you're almost set up to fail if you say the wrong thing. And I think that's why sometimes people get bored of, you know, boys saying the exact same stuff time and time again. You know, I was guilty of it during the Six Nations, doing the captain's press conferences. You feel like you're saying the same thing because you don't want to give any inkling into what's happening with the squad or little bits that's just going to set you up for failure, because the same people that will big you up, if it goes tits up, will be the same people that will get stuck into you. So that's why I think rugby players on the whole are a little bit reserved when it comes to this kind of thing. And, you know, some people will agree with it, some people will disagree with it, but I guess it's each to their own at the end of the day, isn't it?
I think it's really interesting. And I wonder how limiting it is.
It's a very tricky one, because especially with rugby as well, and how professional rugby is, the boys are in a lot of the time. So unless you're just documenting what you're doing through the day, you've got to, generally with Instagram, unless you've got a massive sport, you know, I mean, you look at someone like Messi, who's got 166 million followers, but he does nothing on it. He only follows 200 people and he's only done 600 posts whenever he became a member. And he's not someone, I don't think, who's out there craving it. He doesn't seem to have loads of businesses that he's trying to promote. He just gets on and lets his football do the talking. But yeah, he still has 166 million.
Yes, but he is the best player
yes,
then, on the planet at the biggest sport.
But then, yes, at the biggest sport. And that's the problem, is because you're not the biggest sport, you need, that is what you're basically saying, is people, we need to do creative things with our best players, like Hoggy, who can score tries and wow anyone. If you put highlights of Hoggy's best tries on, people will watch it, you will get lots of thousands of views. But then, is that then going to expand to a bigger market that's out there without them having to do something that they don't really want to do? It's just the size of the sport, surely. Without the sport growing, the superstars don't lift above the sport, if you know what I mean.
But I'd say you need the superstars to grow the sport. It's chicken and egg and chicken, and carts and horses, whatever. Just one quick one question on your on the media duties. Do you find it frustrating reading from a media handbook and parroting the lines that you're given? Would you love to go full Conor McGregor and, you know, broadside everyone you're playing against? Or actually, are you just quite happy to get it done and get on with it?
I think there's a balance between it, if I'm honest. I think there's times that you just have to say what has to be said and get out of there. None of us enjoy speaking to the press at all. Let's be honest. They just get
why? In.
They're asking you questions that you've heard time and time again. The exact same. How's the preparation been? You can only talk X amount on how the preparation's been going. And then you'll get the same question the week after. And then it'll be a different question comes in. And then they'll go back to the next question, which will be the previous question. You're like, well, you know, I'll be listening to what's been said, this, that, and that. The thing for me during the Six Nations was I wanted to get in, say what had to be said, back the boys up when it needed to be done, and then get out of there. The times that I had a little bit of fun would be after the game, you know, in terms of like, you know, the first couple of games, obviously, I left my hands at BT Murrayfield. So,
yeah,
you know, like I was happy to say that on the chin because I knew I'd screwed up. There was nothing to do with the team. It was on me. I had a bit of fun with it. And then it came back time and time and time again. But I think there's a balance. There's a balance between backing your mates up, backing the team up, making sure everything's spot on, but then chucking a little bit cat amongst the pigeons every now and then and seeing what happens. But at the end of the day, you're sometimes just set up to fail, and the last thing I want is added pressure.
Tins, do we need good answers which will lead to good questions, or do good questions lead to good answers?
Good questions lead to good answers, I think. But then what we want looking in is players to have a little bit more, feel they have a little bit more freedom. But if you only do it one time and it backfires, then it becomes a nightmare for you. You know, what Dylan said about, if his press conference where he said about his concussion thing and then suddenly Eddie's all over him. You know, that's what you don't want. And that's the reality of the team sport that we're in, is whenever you say something that the media can spin and put into controversy, then it's a bad place for you personally, because the coach will always say you've let the team down or something. And that's not really what you want. You want people with personalities to have a bit of fun and do that, and it's quite hard to get that balance.
I'm not sure we've found any answers, but we've certainly asked a question or two. I'm sure there'll be others who
Hoggy, just be loose in all your press conferences. Just say you're going to, Scotland are going to win everything. Obviously, come this autumn, all you need to do is say we win all our games and the other guys lose, we win the Six Nations. It's a mathematical possibility.
Yeah, but the problem is we've done that going into the World Cup. We said we're going to win the World Cup and we didn't even bloody qualify, so I'm not adding any pressure onto us ever again.
I don't know. Someone's got to light some fires in the sport. Yes. To be continued, very much so. Stuart, let's talk about you. How did you get into it? What was the start point for you?
I was brought up in a rugby family. My dad played all the way through you know, his younger days. Then he went into refereeing and refereed the Celtic League, it was back in the day, so the Pro 14 now. So, you know, I've followed him around a fair bit. And my brother, he's 5 years older than me. You know, he played all kind of age groups growing up. And I think we went to Wales for his under-18s, England for his under-19s, and then Dubai for under-20s World Cup. So I got a kind of feel for what it was like to play for Scotland age grade stuff. And that was a kind of bit for me, as I'd quite like to do this as well. But like anything, I tried all the different sports growing up. Until I was about 16, until I got picked into Scotland under 17s, actually, I was riding out in a racing yard and was contemplating becoming a jockey. So,
for real?
Yeah, everybody laughs at that now because of the way I look. But I was tiny. My first year in the academy when I was 17, I had 6 months out because my body couldn't keep up with growing and adding on weight when I was lifting weights. So I had Osgood-Slater's disease in my knee, so I had 6 months of doing nothing. And then I kind of decided then, rugby isn't really for me, but stuck at it and got picked in the academy and ended up at Glasgow just after that. So yeah, I would say my family's been massive. You know, obviously watched them all growing up and got a little taste of, a little feel for what it'd be like. And yeah, I never really looked back, to be honest. It was either rugby or, actually, I don't know what it would be if it wasn't for rugby.
That's unbelievable. So tell me more about, were you quite a good jockey?
I had horses and ponies growing up. I would never say I'd made it as a jockey, but it wouldn't be through lack of trying. You know, the thing for me is it was pretty much whatever was on the TV at the time. You know, if it was Wimbledon, we'd all be playing tennis. If, you know, the Open was on, we'd be scalping golf balls off the back hill over the main road. There's loads of different bits and pieces. But yeah, it was purely because of my mates. You know, where I was brought up, it's either horses or rugby. And all my mates were kind of brought up in horsey families. And, you know, I used to go and ride out at the local trainer down the road, Donald Willans. So yeah, that was the kind of, I think I was about 13 till I was about 16 every weekend. So yeah, it was good fun.
What was the closest track to you? Did you end up going much? Did your dad take you or anything?
No, like I generally just used to watch it on the TV. I think the closest race course to us would be Kelso, which is, what, 20, 25 minutes away from where we were brought up. So, you know, I've been there a few times, been to Musselburgh, been to Newcastle a few times, but it's like everything. We were brought up in a small town. You kind of keep an eye on everybody that's going on. And, you know, there was two racehorse trainers in the town, both brothers, one at different ends of the town. So, yeah, we always kept a close eye on them. And it was always a big thing. If the horses had gone well, they ended up in the local paper. So yeah, like it was something to make money when you're younger as well, and you know, a little bit life experience of riding out horses and mucking out stables first thing in the morning. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
Are you interested in owning a leg or a horse, or I mean, do you follow it now?
Yeah, so myself and our couple of mates from back home, we've got a horse in Alistair Williams's yard, which is Donald's older brother. It's called Corked. She's run a few times for us. We've had her maybe two and a half years now. So she's going all right. She's starting to come in a little bit of form, and it's good now because there's a couple of boys at the club as well, you know, Johnny Hill and Alex Cuthbert, who are keen into their horses as well. So it's been a good, you know, conversation starter every now and then, and there's some tips fly across from each other. So yeah, it's good fun. And ever since lockdown started easing, you know, Jill, my wife, had horses growing up as well. So we've managed to get a hold of a couple that we keep along the road here from the house as pets now. So yeah, it's good fun. I do enjoy it.
Follow those Welshies. They get lucky with those horses. You know, we have to Foxy Davis and his horse, yeah. Potter's Corner. Yeah,
yeah, fair all sure. About it. Cathy has a few tips every now and then, and he'll tell us a good tip, and then all of a sudden he'll keep a couple to himself that he's ended up winning big on. So he's a bit of a bandit when it comes to that. But as I say, it's good fun, good interest outside rugby, and you know, different boys will be keen in it as well.
Growing up, were you... I'm not going to say tear away, but did you challenge authority a bit growing up?
Yeah, I was pretty wild at school, you could say. I didn't particularly enjoy sitting in classrooms. Just wanted to be outside kicking a ball around. I left school at the earliest opportunity and went straight into college to do a rugby course, actually. And all I wanted to do was to play rugby. I learned absolutely nothing on the course. I didn't qualify in anything because I was just interested in the morning sessions. And then the year after, I got signed into the academy. So that is probably my biggest regret, is not sticking in at school, because you have to do X, Y, and Z now to be able to get into anything. So hopefully the kids don't learn from their dad and stick to what their mum knows.
Were you naughty and did you get away with it, or were you naughty and always caught?
I was naughty and got away with it. I had a little cheeky smile that my mum hated. And she used to always say that if I was first, there would never have been a second child. So, yeah, I think that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Do your little ones behave? Have you got them under control? Or are you seeing old habits dying hard in the younger generation?
Unfortunately, actually, my eldest, who's just gone into school, my wife came back today saying his name was on the board for being naughty. So I was getting the blame for it for some reason. I don't know why, but... Now, look, we'll keep the kids as disciplined as we possibly can, and hopefully that, you know, they're polite kids. They are really polite kids. But as long as they stick in at school, we'll be happy.
Okay, I'm going to ask you quite an intense question, and I understand if you don't want to go there, but can I ask you about April the 4th, 2009?
Yeah, you know, I was involved in a car crash that unfortunately killed my best mate. I think it was the day after I was meant to go to play for Scotland under 17, so I wasn't allowed to play in the Sevens tournament we were at, and we were going to a party that night. One of the boys had literally just passed his driving test, and there's four of us got left home, and I played rock, paper, scissors with my, you know, the three boys that were in the car, and unfortunately, you know, Richard, who was in the front, one rock, paper, scissors to sit in the front, and unfortunately we just got caught up in a bad crash, and he was unfortunately killed at the scene. So, you know, for me, like I've said all along, that I was trying to take him along the journey that I'm living with now, because he was such a terrific bloke, very, very talented, and he'd quite easily have been in my shoes. So, yeah, for me, I just want to try and you know, honour him and make him and his family proud by taking them on the journey that I live, that I'm involved in, and every time I score a try, I make the W sign for him, which is his initials. So, yeah, my first tattoo was his initials on my ribs. So, yeah, miss him very much.
Yeah, that's incredibly brave of you to tell that story, and I'm very grateful. I mean, is it sort of one of those life-defining moments that you look back on now?
Yeah, 100%. I think, as I say, you know, for me, you know, I lost a best mate, but for Tommy and Sandra, they lost a son, and Emily and Matthew lost a brother. So, you know, for me, I just want to try and be there for the family. Obviously, I don't see them as much as I'd like, but, you know, every opportunity, I've made a deal now that every time I'm home, I'll go and see them. So they're a fantastic family. You know, it's a sad time for us all.
Does it ever creep in your mind? Do you ever think of, like, what, you know, if you'd have won that?
I don't think of that, because, you know, unfortunately, what's happened's happened. We can't change anything. We can't go back in time and do it all over again, as much as I'd like to. These things unfortunately happen in life. You know, it's not always going to be plain sailing, and, you know, life will chuck some bad obstacles at you, and it's your ability to bounce through them and make the most of it. And, you know, as I say, I'm trying to live my life to the fullest and bring Richard along the journey that I'm living with, and I just want to make him and his family proud, and, you know, I'll not rest until I've done that.
You've done an exceptional job in exactly that. I'm sure he'd be incredibly proud. I imagine it sort of focuses the mind. You know, things sort of happened very quickly for you at the start of your career. Do you ever look back now and wonder, Christ, it happened almost too quickly?
Not for me. As I said, all I wanted to do when I was younger was to play rugby. And I think timing-wise, it probably couldn't have worked out any better. You know, I was given an opportunity to go to Glasgow in 2010. You know, I had to kind of learn a lot because I went to Glasgow as a 13. And then they decided to move me to fullback. And, you know, I learned a lot of Bernard Stortoni, who was an unbelievable fullback for Glasgow and for Argentina. So, you know, he took me under his wing for a year and retired at the end of that season. And it was the 2011 World Cup. A lot of the, you know, first choice Glasgow boys were away to New Zealand with Scotland, and Bernie retired, as I say. So I was given, you know, another opportunity to try and play. Just turned 19, sitting behind Peter Murchie, who was the first choice fullback. And, you know, unfortunately, but fortunately for me, he picked up a bad injury in the first game of the season, which allowed me, you know, a fair bit of game time. And I had in my contract, I had to get 6 professional starts before Christmas to then be given a contract at the back of it. And, you know, with Peter's injury, I managed to play the first 6 games and ended up playing, you know, the whole of that season and got capped in the 2012 Six Nations. So it did happen really, really quickly, but I wouldn't change it. I think the only thing that I would change would be to maybe listen and not try and take on the world at the very, very beginning. But, you know, I was young and naive, and, you know, looking back now, it's easy to say you change it, but, you know, these things happen. As I say, it's the making of the man.
Can I ask, so a couple of things really, because not only did you make your debut in 2012, but you did you score inside the first 10 minutes of your first cap?
Yeah, I played Wales 2 weeks earlier, second game of the Six Nations, and Roman Poit unfortunately said I knocked the ball on whilst going over the line. I know I've been known to do that in the past, but I genuinely didn't drop it this time. I didn't go the TMO, and, you know, the replay showed that I didn't drop it, so you know, could have scored on debut, but unfortunately it wasn't meant to be. But yeah, I got my first start the week or 2 weeks after against France at home, and I think it was Lee Jones at the time put me away in the corner in the 8th minute, and, you know, it's such a surreal moment to be able to score for your country. And I've booted the ball into the crowd where we needed it for the conversion, but to score was just the ultimate dream come true.
Do you remember, obviously you're immersed in a rugby family. Do you remember the reactions of your nearest and your dearest?
Yeah, I remember going back home on the Tuesday night before going to Wales, and my old man came up to me and said, "What are you doing back here?" Because I lived in Glasgow. I went back down to Hoyk. He said, "What are you doing here?" I just said, "I came to tell you that I'm going to be on the bench against Wales." And he looked at me and said, "You being serious?" I went, "Yes." And he just broke down in tears. And I was like, "Fuck." You can see how much it meant to me, but you can see how much it means to the family as well. And I was like, "Oh, this is what, all the sacrifices you made as a kid and all the sacrifices that they made as well to get me to where I am. It was good to see how much it meant to them. And now they have always been and will always be my number one supporters. And, now that they've retired just in July past, I think there'll be a lot of games when it's safe to do so.
What was Robbo like? Obviously, Andy Robinson coached me right at the start and always tried to play mind games for early on. But then I think he went through a bit through his career where he relaxed off. What was he like when he first told you? Where did he tell you straight away, or did he play Jedi mind tricks on you before he let you know you were starting?
No, I think he phoned me up a couple of days before the squad was going to be announced for the Six Nations camp. And I obviously didn't have Andy Robinson's number. Being 19, I was like, yeah, what's the point having the Scotland coach's number? And he phoned me and he said, "Stuart, it's Andy Robinson here." And I went, "Ha, good one," and hung up, thinking it was one of the boys taking the piss. And he phoned me back 2 minutes later, and he wasn't best pleased, to be fair. He was like, it's genuinely Andy Robinson here. You're going to be involved in the squad. So obviously, I can't remember the rest of the conversation because I just, I was so chuffed. But when I was going to be involved for the first time, I remember it. The sad old story of Dan Parks was brought in back after the World Cup when he wanted to retire. He was brought back in for the England game, I think it was. He got charged down just after halftime and was hooked straight off. I was told he wasn't going to be playing again. So then, the week after, we were in the national changing room, and he just flipped the flip chat across. And obviously, Rory Lamont was playing some very, very good rugby at the time. He was starting at fullback. So I just kind of thought, there are not going to be many changes on the bench. Not everybody that came on, done a job. And boys started, I couldn't see the bench. Sitting at the back, you see all these big guys sitting in front of you, kind of hiding away. But yeah, the boys started turning around and congratulating me. So I just kind of had a little look and saw that, number 22 was Hogg. And I was like, holy shit, it's getting real now. And yeah, just started getting really, really nervous. I think this was the Tuesday. I don't think I slept until the Saturday night. And obviously I had my initiation on the Saturday night, so that helped me sleep easy. But yeah, and that was just such a surreal week, and loved every single minute of it.
Can you share the initiation or not?
Yeah, well, I think you chop a drink with every team member. And obviously with it being the second game of the Six Nations, you have a week off after it.
Oh dear, that's a bad one.
Yeah, but my parents were at the after-match function as well down in Cardiff. And, I was just standing speaking to them. Obviously just the first time I'd caught up with them after the game and stuff. And, Sean Lamont comes along with a double whiskey and he just gives me a cheers and chops. And I'm like, oh, here we go. This is the bad start to the night. Double whiskey. And I was like, oh, no. I think obviously you do loads of different shots and glasses of wine. The worst one I had to do actually was, after having a fair amount, was doing a pint with Jim Hamilton. I'd had a few beers and a few different shots, and I was like, I'm going to try and, see if I can beat him here. Instant regret, chopped a pint, run to the toilet, and it was spewing everywhere. And my mum and dad actually had to put me to bed that night. They wrapped loads of towels up in a circle and laid it around my bed so I didn't fall out of it. But
were there any saints, anyone who helped you out and brought you a pint of water, or were they all just mean?
Yeah, little Greg Laidlaw, one of my good mates, he done me a solid, actually. It looked like he had a gin and tonic, where really it was just a glass of water. So he sorted me out a little bit there. He gave me maybe another 5 minutes. But yeah, no, honestly, that day, it was such a surreal day, and one of the best days of my life. So yeah, honestly, I had to sing and everything at night. It was just such a good day. Barring the fact we got beat, everything was perfect.
I love the contrast for your old man, from tears of joy at his pride and son and heir representing his country, through to putting you to bed at the end of a too long a session. I can see that, that's got to come down.
My mum and dad, luckily, were at my first camp, and they rescued my first camp because I just abandoned it because I was in a similar state at my first camp. So I think it's It's quite common on those first caps.
Elite sports people at their best. Right, still to come, we're going to talk Fear, we're going to talk Finn, we're going to talk Georgie Best as well. But you are listening to and watching The Good, The Bad and The Rugby on 21.6 Sport with me, Alex Payne, alongside Tins and the legend that is the Scotland captain, Stuart Hogg. Don't forget, you can sign up to our social media sites, which thousands and thousands of you have done. We've got lots of debate going on through the channels there. And that's also where you'll find all the information about the show, about special events and a whole host of great content that we have got for you. You can also check out the Q&As of both Hask and Tins and connect with our newest member of the team, who is the Norse. Just type in Good Bad Rugby across social media. We are very easy to find. And we have a new friend to welcome to the squad this week as well. I think it's fair to say across the board that 2020 has been, well, let's just call it interesting at this point. Frankly, we could all do a little cheering up from time to time. And we've got someone to put a smile on your face. We are delighted to welcome Beer 52 to the clan. They're offering 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet for free for readers and viewers and listeners of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/the rugby. You've got to pick up the postage. That's only $5.95 and they will do the rest. I'm told that Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club. With over 150,000 members, I reckon one or two of our clan are in there already. They will send you a brand new case every month. Each month's case has got a different theme. We've got previous themes, including New Zealand, South Africa, very acceptable. USA and Europe, I can see what they're doing there. And Korea, for those of you who like to go out on a bit of a limb, tuck into whatever takes your fancy. As an independent British company, Beer 52 are passionate about UK craft beer scene. Support UK British beer. And they will be continuing to support this during what is a very difficult period for us all. If dark beer is not your thing, you can choose light beer as well. You get the idea. It comes with a fabulous award-winning magazine called Ferment and a tasty snack. Don't worry, if you change your mind, you can pause or cancel your account at any time. It literally is as simple as that. Go to beer52.com/rugby to get your first case of 8 beers for just under £6. beer52.com/rugby. I really hope you'll get involved. My name's Mike Tindall, and I approve this message. Nice to have them on board. Hopefully they're going to send you a little something, Tins. Light or dark?
I'm going to go dark, actually.
Foggy?
I think.
I'd go light.
Light, okay.
Can we brew our own, and then can they ship us out? And someone we could have the good, the bad, and rugby choice.
Yeah, it's quite a good idea. I love it. Business planning in the middle of
a... Not just hat racking, then.
So, off the back of... Yeah, I think we should be brewing a little bit of good, bad and rugby beer. In the meantime, Stuart, I want to pick up on the fact you mentioned a bit of an angry man at the start. Did you have quite good mentors to help you channel that into the efficient process you've got now?
Yes and no. I think when you're young, you just think you know it all. You think you can get away with absolutely everything. And I think for me, the kind of turning point in everything was 2013-2014 season. And I just come off the back of a Lions tour, which was unbelievable. And then, you know, I just felt, looking back, I just thought I was a lot better than what I actually was and played horrendous rugby. Got red carded against Wales 2014 and then tried to leave Glasgow. And for me, I was still in contract, still trying to leave the club, and I ended up playing 100 minutes of rugby in about 4 months, 5 months. I played 60 minutes against Treviso, which back then was a guaranteed 5 points. And then Zebra the week after, which again was a guaranteed 5 points. And, you know, I absolutely, you know, looking back, hated it. You know, I missed out on playing in a final for Glasgow. You know, I was adamant during the summer that I was still going to be leaving. And, you know, Greg put me in touch with a guy called Steve Black, who I've been working with since summer 2014. And that, for me, was the turning point in my career. I realised that not everything's going to go your way. It's probably the first minor, you know, well, a major blip in my career that I felt I cannot go back to being like this ever again. So, you know, started working with Steve, started enjoying my rugby again, got my friends back in the Glasgow team, and, you know, we won the league after that. And I remember, you know, Gregor and I have had, you know, a lot of, you know, tough conversations since then, that if I was to leave the club, you know, Gregor believes, and you know, I'd probably be the same, that we wouldn't have a relationship right now.
Wow. How do you look back on that challenging period now?
You know, it gave me the kick up the backside that I needed. As I said, everything up until that point had been plain sailing. I'd been playing every game for club and country, got on the Lions tour. And yeah, you know, for me, just felt as a lot better than what I actually was. But as I say, the big thing for me is, I've always said it, was the making of the man. You know, not everything in life's going to be plain sailing. It's how you react and bounce through it and get on with it. But for me, I had to build up a lot of relationships. I had to build up a lot of trust with everybody again and pretty much start from scratch to earn my place in the side again.
Is that gone in as a mental note? So if you do have a bad game, you don't sort of overreact, or if you have a couple of bad games or a run that you think that, well, you know what a player you are. So can you let that go a bit easier than maybe you did before?
I can now. I think there's a few years, as I say, when I wasn't enjoying it, I was probably my harshest critic. You know, a tiny little mistake that I was making, I would let it eat away at me for a long time, and then I'd try and make up for it, I'd make another mistake. Whereas now I'm just like, I've got to the stage and, you know, everybody knows that, you know, I'm in the second part of my career. I want to go out there and enjoy it as much as I possibly can, because I've missed out on a lot of rugby, you know, the last kind of 3 years with all the injuries, that I just want to get out there and have some fun, make some memories on and off the field. And, you know, if you make a mistake, for me, perfection doesn't exist. So, you know, why chase it? It's a big thing that Rob Baxter and Ali Heifer have said to me all year, that mistakes will happen, just bounce through them, get on with your next job. Which has just given me a license to go out and enjoy myself. And I think that's why now I'm enjoying it on and off the field. And, you know, I feel that, you know, I'm starting to pick up a little bit of form again.
Absolutely. And the rest. I just quickly want to ask you about reintegrating yourself with Glasgow. Who gave you the hardest time to get back into the circle of trust?
See, the thing is, it wasn't, you know, necessarily individuals. I had to build up the trust between the whole team again. A lot of good mates in that team that I would say lost a fair amount of respect for me, and I had to build it back up and say that, you know, I was still at Glasgow for the right reasons. You know, I try to go to Ulster, which, you know, would have been probably the biggest mistake ever.
Did you travel over there? Am I right? Did you just sort of Brian O'Driscoll walk across the pitch in Perpignan at contract negotiations time? Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing looking back was we couldn't have made a bigger arse of it if we tried. We went across the week, we were playing Ulster on the Wednesday. We were playing Ulster on the Friday night. What the hell they were playing at, I do not know. But
so you went over, spoke to them, then came back, and then went back over to play?
No, they came to us on the Friday night, and I was meant to be starting the game. And 8 o'clock on the Thursday morning, that was in Gregor's office. He texted me that the night before, saying, "Office 8 o'clock, we need to chat." And I was like, "Oh, I wonder what he wants ahead of the weekend." He's like, "What the hell are you playing at?" And, you know, I've never seen Gregor as angry in all my life. And, you know, as I say, it's the biggest regret I've had in my rugby career, and it's good that I actually hang around, because if I didn't, I truly believe I would not be playing for Scotland right now.
Wow. So everyone loves a comeback story. We say it almost weekly, and yours is a hell of a comeback story.
Just on Gregor then, is he generally, does most players get on with him? Obviously, he seems to clash with quite a few, not saying big characters like yourself, but obviously the Finn Russell story. Does he just demand high standards, or why do players seem to clash with him?
The biggest thing with Gregor, and fair play to him, the reason we had a big fallout was because he did not want me making the same mistakes that he did as a player. He said that he didn't want to, you know, think you were better than yourself. He didn't want to, you know, move club to club to club type thing. He just wanted me to be settled, me to be playing good rugby, and not making the same mistakes he did. He wants us to learn from him. And that's all he tries to bring out in the boys. I think the times that you've clashed with him is that his attention to detail is ridiculous. Like, he is unbelievable. The amount of rugby that guy must watch is just incredible. But all he wants is the best for us as individuals and also us as a collective. If you ask any of the coaches, any of the players, sorry, that have played under him as a coach, they'll probably say that they've brought the best out of them as an individual. So I think the times that he has clashed is that maybe, you know, we've had a chat that, you know, maybe butt heads against each other. We've not agreed with each other. But now I think he's a lot better over the last kind of few years, that it turns more into a conversation than it does like an argument nowadays. Like, he'll say his reasons behind it. You know, I would say my reasons behind it. And we don't butt heads anywhere near as much as we used to. And I think he is a coach that brings out the best in me and a lot of players. So yeah, like, as I say, like, everything in life's a lesson. And, you know, maybe the approach that he had when he was a younger coach coming into the, you know, the main job at Scottish Rugby, you know, he's learned from that. He's big on saying that he's learned from his mistakes as well. So, you know, not everything's going to be perfect, but we're a damn sight better than what we used to be.
I don't perceive him as a coach who clashes with his players that much. Having said that, the Fingate situation obviously blew up quite a lot. How tricky was that? And I think I'm right in saying that Finn sort of said that they've had the conversation now and hopefully they're back on an even keel. Is that right?
Yeah. What's happened's happened. We can't change anything. We've just got to get on with it. You know, mistakes were made from, you know, numerous different people that, you know, as I say, we can't change it. Just get on with it. I think the best thing that came of it, if we're being honest, is it gave Adam Hastings a lot of game time. It gave us competition for places in the 10 jersey and gave Adam a good bit of experience. But in terms of Finn playing for Scotland again, like, I've been asked it several times, Finn Russell will play for Scotland again 100%, because he is quite possibly right at this minute the best 10 in the world. So he has to be playing the Scotland jersey. And I've spoken to Finn numerous times since then, and he's ready to come back in, and we're all ready to have him back in. So he'll be back. He'll be back.
Does playing with someone like Finn keep you on his toes? Because I'm not entirely sure he often knows what he's going to do. So as someone in the Y channel, how do you play off him, and what are you looking for? Do you have cues that you're trying to bounce?
I think for me as a rugby player as well, when I'm playing some of the best rugby that I can play, is because I've got a guy like Finn Russell inside me. You know, he reads the game, plays before things, you know, actually happen. The way that he communicates on the field, the way that, you know, he brings defences to him, he puts people through holes, little chip kicks, out the back door passes, he's got everything. He is unbelievably chilled out as well. And it bugs me at times, because I think, you know, are you giving everything into a session? Where he is, but he's just, if he makes a mistake, he's just like, it's all right, I'll make up for it. And I'm like, well, that's no foresight. He's like, no, I'll make up for it. And he'll throw this ridiculous, you know, 30-yard pass out the back door, perfect position. I'm just like, that's just unfair. That's just unfair. But yeah, like, look, from my point of view and for a Scottish rugby point of view, he has to play for us 100%.
That's good to hear. I wanted to ask about you personally and about, assuming the captaincy, you know, how comfortable are you in that role?
I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying the challenges that come alongside captaining the team. I think for me, I've been involved since the last World Cup, 2015, within the leadership group. And there's only kind of a handful of us that have been there throughout the whole time. And it's something that I'm incredibly passionate about, is playing for Scotland and making a difference. And I just felt things over the kind of last couple of years, we had changed captain a few times. You know, Greg was captain, then, you know, John Barclay, and went to Stuart McInally ahead of the World Cup. And I just felt like, you know, we needed some stability in that area. They're all fantastic leaders, but Greg, if came off the back of a few injuries, wasn't first choice scrum half. Barks, you know, very, very similarly. You know, he was in the team and then he was out of the team. You know, Rambo during the World Cup as well, like a fantastic leader. They're all unbelievable. They've all given absolutely everything to Scotland. But then when it came to the biggest game of the World Cup, like, our captain wasn't playing. He wasn't starting. So I just felt something, it might be wrong of me to say that, I just felt something wasn't quite right, and I wanted to be in a position to make a difference. And I asked Gregor, as I said earlier, he's always keen to learn and improve, and he asked us what he felt, you know, worked for us during the World Cup and what he felt we could improve on. And I said, Luke, what's your take on leadership moving forward? And he asked me the exact same question. I said, well, Luke, if there was ever an opportunity that, you know, I could captain the side, then I'd be more than willing to put my hand up and try and take us forward, because, as I said, I'm incredibly passionate about playing for Scotland and I want to make a difference. You know, whether I'm the right man for the job, I don't know, but, you know, it's not going to be through lack of trying to make an effort.
Were you just thinking about the extra shuttles to get to the referee and you thought, I might get a bit more mileage up on my stats? And it's difficult to captain from fullback. You're a long way from the action, so you're still going to have to rely on your guys, right?
It is indeed, and I think that's the biggest thing we've learned from the leadership group, is we narrowed it down to four going into the Six Nations, and I think it's probably one of the best things that have happened. You know, for me, during the week, you know, it's not just the captain that speaks all the time. You know, you'll ask everybody to have an input, because it's key that everybody, you know, has a voice and everything. I think in terms of the leadership group, we'd almost take a day in the week to lead. You know, what is the point? Let's be honest. What is the point on a Tuesday physical defence session? Me, as a fullback, standing talking about making dominant tackles, because I don't make dominant tackles. I don't make tackles, let's be honest. So what was the point of me leading that day? So, you know, I'd leave it to Fraz Brown or to Rambo McInally, you know, boys that are right in amongst it. And it was the same when it came to games. Like, you know, we'd always have the conversation, you know, before with the referee that, you know, look, if there's anything happening in the scrums or the mauls or the breakdown, let's not drag me in for fullback. Speak to whoever's starting at hooker, because you know I'll make everything you know run quicker. Because I have no idea what goes on in the scrum, what goes on in the mall. Give it to boys that have a rough idea. And I think we complemented and bounced off each other really quite well during the Six Nations. And you know, as I say, I'm new to being captain, but in terms of what I've done differently, I've probably not done a whole lot differently in my approach to things. And I think, you know, for me, it's, you know, hopefully I'm given another opportunity when it comes to the autumn, and we can just continue to bounce off each other and make sure we're progressing as a nation.
Are you William Wallace in the changing room, or are you quite a forensic scientist in terms of final messages?
You know, I try and make everything, you know, as natural as possible, but at times, you know, I have been looking, you know, little bits and pieces. You know, I speak to Al Kellogg a huge amount, who's a good mate of mine, and you know, he was a fantastic leader. I speak to Greg Laidlaw a fair bit before the Six Nations as well. And you know, I've learned a lot from these guys on and off the field over the last few years. And you just try and take little bits and pieces that you've learned from them, but add your little twist to it as well. Like, I'm not going to be one for motivating people. I'll say a little bit here and there, but I want my leadership to be in a way that they follow me on the field with the way that I perform, the way that, you know, I go about my work on a daily basis. And that's the kind of standard that I want to try and set, which has been reached for years. But as I say, I just want to perform to the best of my ability, and hopefully boys, you know, will see that and come alongside.
Can I ask you about pressure and expectation? I mean, it's interesting you reference Finn, who used to listen to music and sort of do a little samba in his warm-up. Are you someone who is very comfortable in this environment and, you know, you don't get nervous, you know what you're doing? Or are you someone who finds the occasion and the responsibility just occasionally quite a burden to carry?
I love it. Like, it's so weird. Like, the time that I probably least enjoy is the time from captain's run, the rest of the afternoon, and then the whole of the next again morning until you actually play, because you've done everything you possibly can and you're literally waiting on the game coming. So for me, I get really, really quite nervous when you're on the team bus and you see the stadium for the first time, or when you're driving in and you see your home club for the first time. And that's when I really start to get nervous. And you know, I'll stick my headphones. I used to be into, you know, the big head banging music and get myself psyched up, and then realise that didn't work for me. So yeah, you know, I'm pretty chilled out. I just listen to music, try and have a laugh, if I'm honest. Like, the biggest thing I've learned is, you know, who likes to keep themselves to themselves and who likes to have a little bit of banter in the changing room. So muck about as much as I possibly can, but then understand that when it comes to go time, then, you know, I'm on the money. But yeah, the more and more that I think about it, the more that I start to get worried and nervous, and that's when you start to, you know, make a few mistakes early doors, whereas you kind of chill out and start looking forward to it and enjoying an opportunity to express yourself again.
Who are the worst to be around in terms of intensity, nerves, incapable of sort of handling the pressures that come?
I try and avoid Johnny Gray as much as I possibly can, and I've told all the Chiefs boys about him, because, you know, that guy for a stage used to do his line-out strapping about 3 or 4 times before actually playing. You know, he'd do his line-out strap and ask his lifters what it was like. They would say it was be perfect, and then he'd take it all off again. He'd have about 3 pairs of boots ready for him, you know, to go onto the pitch and stuff. So I try and avoid him, but I'll ask him every now and then if he's all right. But, you know, as I say, you tend to know the boys that you sit around. So for me now, it's obviously the changing room being a lot different with the COVID, you know, rules. I think, you know, Jack Noel and I sit away in the corner and we just have a little conversation, and all of a sudden I'll be speaking to him, thinking I'll be doing my tape or my boots or whatever, and I'll be sitting speaking away to him. He's not replying. I'm like, what a rude bugger. And then realise he's sitting his headphones on. He's had enough of me. So yeah, I try and stay chilled out. Like, look forward to the occasion as opposed to getting nervous for him.
You're safe with Jack Noel as long as he hasn't axed you from following you on your social media yet, like he did to Sladey.
Yeah, that's because Sladey turned into a personal trainer during lockdown, didn't he? He was telling everybody all about his sessions and the fact he had a home gym and he was doing all this running and all that. And you know, he was getting all these kind of rugby superstars doing all his sessions and all the Joe Public jumping onto it. So obviously that got a bit annoying after a little while, so Knowles unfollowed him, and I think he took it to heart for a bit, in fairness. But I think they're back now following each other. So
I was going to say, how was your lockdown? How was your lockdown training?
So the first couple of weeks, I had a few bits and pieces in terms of gym wear in the garage, and then I was like, do you know what? Like, I'm not one for being a manly man who has, you know, all the toolboxes of the day and all this, that, and hides away in the garage and, you know, builds stuff like that. That's just not me. So I had my garage renovated into a gym, head there for about 3 hours a day. So my missus was like, you know, how long does a gym session normally last? So I would say, oh, guaranteed, you know, probably 2.5-3 hours every day. I said, sometimes I'll be in there twice a day, depending on, you know, if I've got rehab or et cetera. Obviously, the first couple of weeks, you know, we didn't know how long lockdown was going to last. So, you know, I was training really quite hard. I was enjoying it, hiding away for, as I say, about 3 hours. I'd do my gym session in just over an hour and a quarter. sit and watch a film or something on Netflix.
Recovery, darling.
Well, absolutely. Jill walked in one day and I had the stretch band around the leg, stretching the hammies whilst watching Netflix. I said, no, look, it's recovery. This is part of it. So I kind of got away with it. And 4 or 5 weeks into it, Jill actually started jumping in and training in the gym with me. So the sessions went from, you know, being 3 hours long to 45 minutes chips and then. But no, it was good fun. Like, I'm really fortunate and glad that I managed to get all that done, because I'd have probably gone insane if it wasn't for my trainer. I really enjoy looking after my body, trying to get the best out of myself. So it was good to hide away and, you know, get some good, you know, valuable training in.
I know there was obviously a wonderful culture at Glasgow, and actually I remember covering your pro, I can't remember if it was pro 12, I think it was pro 12 when you won it, or was it pro 14 against Munster?
Pro 12.
It was, yeah, pro 12, yeah. It was a wonderful story, that. It was a great day. But I'm just interested how moving to Exeter has sort of, I suppose, changed your outlook at all. Have you found a sort of new lease of life and love for the game because of the way they do things down Chiefs way?
100%. You know, I had the opportunity to come here in 2017, and just with the timing, we had just had our second kid, so we felt the timing just wasn't quite right to move on. But I kept a close eye on Exeter for the next couple of years, and as I say, we came down just after the World Cup, and it's probably the best rugby decision and quite possibly life decision we've made as a family to shut up shop and move on and experience new parts of Britain, and obviously a new kind of way of life. Obviously, in Glasgow, we were used to the wind and the rain and the grey skies and never getting to go outside, to come in down, you know, 450 odd miles or whatever it is to the sun. I think we're just on a double figure days of rain since the start of lockdown, which has been brilliant for my wife. Not so much the ginger Scotsman. No, I'm absolutely loving it. Obviously, everything at the club is brilliant. Great bunch of boys. Coaches are unbelievable. Just a great story for the club as well, from, you know, how they've been built up over the years. And it's just great now to be a part of it. And the big thing for me is I came down here to learn and improve both on and off the field. And, you know, I believe I'm doing that. And I'm having some fun along the way. So, you know, long may that continue.
We had Jack on the other day, who was fairly he just basically called his head coach Baxter, which I thought was a fairly sort of a fairly formal way of going about chatting, yeah, with your head coach. Talk us through Rob and his outlook and how perhaps he's helped you with your game.
He's been brilliant. He just, you know, instills a huge amount of confidence and belief in us all. He makes us go out there and, you know, show our individual talents. He's massive on chasing highlight moments for you as an individual, because if you're doing that, then you're making the team tick. So for me, you know, it could be a line break or a clearance kick or whatever it may be. You get little highlights added to your analysis. So, no, I love it. I love the fact, you know, my first game against Bath, you know, wet and windy Friday night, and, you know, we were absolutely diabolical in the first half, and I was expecting to go in to get an absolute bollocking. And he just said, look, lads, we've been the best team for 35 minutes there. We switched off for the last five and they've scored, they're ahead, but I can feel it, it's going to come, we're going to be all right. And I was like looking at the boys going, you know, is he serious? Like, he's not going to give us, you know, a bollocking. And, you know, they were saying, that's it. And, you know, we got beaten that game. And he's like, look, lads, it's a long old season. We've got, you know, 20 odd games to go. Let's enjoy a beer and a bus on the way home. So I was like, well, now we're talking, this is good. And, you know, he hasn't changed his approach at all. Like, everything is just go out there and show your individual talent and, you know, have some fun. And that's exactly what we're doing as a club, and I'm absolutely loving it. I'm loving being a part of it.
Are the bus trips as legendary as folklore would have them?
Oh, they are incredible. We've had some brilliant ones as well. Like, I've not seen half of it by the sounds of it, but, you know, we played Leicester just before Christmas, and we had you know, cheese and biscuits and wine on the way home and stuff, and, you know, the social committee sort it out every week. They are unbelievable. And as I say, the best thing for us, or the big thing for us as a club, is we want to make memories on and off the field, and you know, having a beer and enjoying each other's company is a huge part of rugby, because it can be stressful during the week. You are there to perform and give absolutely everything, but it's probably, you know, where rugby is unique. You switch off and have a few quiets after the game, and you know, make memories off it too.
If cheese and biscuits is as much as you can give us, I think that's probably what goes on bus stays on bus. There's no murder in there somewhere. Quick word on this weekend, Heineken Champions Cup. How is everything kind of... I'm not going to ask you the question, how's it all been? But, you know, a little bit of buzz?
Yeah, there's a huge buzz, obviously. This was our kind of day one of the week as we play Sunday. So there's a good buzz about the club throughout the today. Obviously, the last few weeks, we've been in a very, very good place. I think we won 6 out of the 7 games, and we're playing some bloody good rugby at times as well. So I think the pleasing thing is the last couple of games haven't quite gone exactly how we'd like them. But for us, we still managed to pick up 5 points against Gloucester with, you know, a pretty iffy performance in attack first half and defensively second half. So for us, it's probably better happening then. Whereas now, we're all roads lead to Sunday evening. We're very much looking forward to it. I think this is the first as a club to have a home quarterfinal in Europe. So yeah, we're absolutely buzzing for it. We're really hoping to set a stall out in this tournament and make the most of our position right now. So yeah, it's a massive few weeks for the club, and you know, I'm buzzing to be a part of it.
I would like to think they've got a very good chance. They're very strong. I like the balance that Exeter have got, the pressure that they can put under their ability to run from everywhere, but also then how they protect their end. And we know how dangerous they are when they get into the opposition last 22. They grind you down, but then they have the ability to score out wide. So they bring the full package of being unlucky in seasons past in the Heineken Cup. But you know, I want to see English clubs go far. Yeah. I love how Exeter play. I think they're a great club. A club that I would have loved to have played for, so I'll back them.
There you are, that's done it for you. Couple of quick bits just before, I'm conscious of time and I can hear more little people who would like a bit of daddy. Lions, is that a double lion is a hell of an achievement, but is it in some ways an itch that you really want to scratch next year?
This is the question that I genuinely hate answering, because...
Oh really, is this one you get asked every single from the press pack? I want to try and not do that, but...
I think the big thing for me, Luke, is, as I say, I believe I was playing some of the best rugby in my career prior to the 2017 tour. And obviously injuries, part and parcel of playing rugby. That injury, that fractured eye socket, rocked me for a long time. And it hurt me to sit back home and watch the Lions play. The big thing for me now is that I'm concentrating. You know, this is going to be the answer you're not wanting. But for me, I'm just concentrating on doing my job for Exeter and then Scotland. I'm a big believer that what's for you won't go past you. So in terms of Lions next year, I can assure you it's not going to be through lack of trying.
Page 17 of the media handbook.
Yeah, but what do you expect him to say? It's like anything. It's if he doesn't play well for Exeter, he might still play for Scotland.
So this comes back to global superstars. You know, if you are at the top of the queue, which you are, you know, why can you not say if it goes well for Exeter and Scotland, you know, I'm absolutely desperate to be on that plane and to be a key part of Lions winning in South Africa?
Yeah, look, obviously I've got individual goals that will remain in-house, but for me, like, as I talked earlier when we had the conversation of added pressure, you know, if I was to sit around here and say, you know, I want to go on the next Lions tour, the media are just going to blow it up and say, you know, this is what he wants type thing, and it's just going to add extra pressure onto myself. But for me, like, my only interest right now is winning trophies for Exeter and performing to the best of my ability, and if I'm doing that, then I give myself every opportunity.
Yeah, he's definitely
page 18 of the media handbook. The media would be more surprised if he said, "Yeah, not really that interested." Actually, to be honest with you, it's not news that you want to go on a Lions tour, and it's not news that that's your personal ambition. I was just interested, having been in 2013 as the youngest Lion, and having obviously missed out in 2017 in the most unfortunate circumstances. You know, do you feel that you need to be a test Lion to itch that scratch? Does it bug you that you haven't yet had the chance to wear a test jersey?
What bugs me is you saying itch that scratch rather than scratch that itch.
Potato, potato.
I'm just critiquing you the other way around.
Yeah, fair play. But genuine question, you know, do you feel for all the talent that you've got and everything you've done in the game, becoming a test Lion is still top of the list?
I'd love to be. I'd love to do it, yes.
That's the answer I wanted. What does the Lions mean to you?
I mean, it means a great deal. It means a lot because it is the highest level of rugby you can possibly play as a professional rugby player. So to have an opportunity to do that would be unbelievable. I think for me, everybody goes back to it of watching 97 Lions video. I must have watched that 100 times, no word of a lie. It got to the stage that, you know, you could quote what was coming around the corner with the next bit of video footage, and absolutely loved it. So it's massive. You know, you get four nations coming together as one, and it's just mental, man. The amount of support that goes down, it's unbelievable. You have to experience.
Lions series win, you starting every test at fullback, or a Scotland Grand Slam?
Come on, mate.
Take them both.
The thing is, if you say one, you say it's got to be the wrong answer. So I'm going to say I'd love to do both.
Very, very diplomatic. Page 19 of the media handbook. George Best. I was not expecting this. Is this for real?
Yeah, mate. See, the problem is, right, that, and I've said it for a long, long time now, is that, you know, my dad was brought up in a small family, and unfortunately all of his family passed away when he was young. And he always wanted to find out his family tree, his family history, and where they were all from. And it actually came on the back of my first cap in Wales that we found out we had relatives in Northern Ireland. And we got in touch with them, and they're an unbelievable, unbelievable family. We call them the bunch of dafties. Pretty loose when they have a few beers and some champagne. But yeah, it came around just after that kind of time. And, you know, to cut a long story short, it turns out that in a very, very distant way, and I'm going to hold on to it, in a very, very distant way, we're related to George Best, which is pretty cool. So all in the back of playing rugby for Scotland, you find out these little things.
That is extraordinary. That is, and perhaps it explains the flamboyant hair and the flamboyant style of play.
He's let himself down on the off the field stuff there, I think. Let that game up.
That is incredible. Are you interested in all that kind of thing? I mean, now you've started tracing, do you keep going? Or actually, George Best will do. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, but I believe we've actually found out everything that we need to find out, because for my dad, he's managed to find out all about his family and meet all of his family, who are now, you know, you'd feel you've known them for forever. As I say, they're a brilliant bunch, and my parents spend a lot of time over in Northern Ireland, and, you know, they come to Hoyke as well. So they're an unbelievable bunch, and it's brought us, I believe it's brought us as a family closer as well, that there's more of us, you know, all enjoy each other's company. So, you know, it's very special for an old man especially.
That was brilliant to hear. Well done, you. Tins, what a treat to have him, the great man, on.
No, it's good. It's good to get him on. He's sort of older generation in a young man's body. He fits my mantra. He enjoys what he does on the field. He enjoys the social side afterwards, getting to know people and making friendships. And that's why I like him so much.
Oh God, we need some violin music. Just before we go, will you do our quick weekly pop quiz, which is called Shoot from the Lip? It's quick fire answers. You up for that?
Yep.
Question one, what's your favourite word?
Ball bag.
Welcome to Sandy Park. Your least favourite word?
No.
Greatest moment in the game?
Beating England 2018.
Oh, God. What's been your worst?
Red card, 2004.
Favourite swear word?
Ball bag.
What noise do you love? Lovely. What noise do you hate?
Kids crying.
Yeah, I'll drink to that. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Footballer.
Which club?
Hibernian. Oh, FC. God.
Are you like a mad fan or just a casual fan?
Just a casual fan. God, I couldn't tell you who they played last week or who they're playing this week, but I support them.
Hips till I die. If you could go on a road trip with three players, who'd be in the car?
Not Henry Slade, because his breath stinks.
That's a clean bowl.
Oh, he's getting stumped.
Poor Slady, I feel really sorry for him.
It's just because his skin's perfect, he's a good body, he has to have something wrong, doesn't he?
Yeah, all right.
Who would I take? Jack Noel, because he's got good crack and would probably get a huge amount of freebies on the back of it.
Yeah.
I would take Duncan Taylor, who plays at Sarries, because he is phenomenal on the guitar and singing.
He's a drinking buddy, or unless Knowles is a great drinky.
Nah, I knows he hardly drinks.
Al Kellogg, a mentor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but he'd board a leaf at you, man.
Hey, big fella.
Right, big fella.
I should play for Glasgow. I'll take tens because we'll have a beer.
Yes, I made it.
If heaven exists, what would you like? Final question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
What the fuck? What would I say? In you come, big fella.
Tell you what, if we get up there and God says that, I will...
you come,
yeah. I'll take a moment. Stuart Hogg, it's been an absolute pleasure. You've been remarkably honest. It's been really good fun. Thank you very, very much indeed for coming on the Good, the Bad and the Rugby. Final question. Do you want a good T-shirt, a bad T-shirt or a rugby T-shirt?
Good T-shirt.
Good on you. I think that's the first one out of the bag, actually.
I thought after he said... I'm not even shy about it. I obsess about rugby. I was sure he was going to take a rugby.
Tins gets really upset because he is the rugby and no one wants a rugby T-shirt. So his
no one wants to admit they want to be a Norse. The only Norse is the good.
They'll be down the jumble sale next weekend. Thank you for coming on. Come back and play again sometime soon. All the best to all the Exeter lads for this weekend and Harlequin Champions Cup quarterfinal. We'll be watching with great interest. And good luck with Jill. I hope she lets you off for having missed bedtime, bath time and all the rest.
Send my love to Jill.
She's just brought me a cup of tea, so I think I'm
still... Well done, you. You've mapped out life very well. Hoggy, thank you. A lot of fun. Look after yourself, go well, and we'll catch up again soon, I hope. Ladies and gents, what a superstar. That is it for this week. Thank you for watching, and thank you for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. Please subscribe on YouTube and wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Just type in Good, Bad, Rugby, and do leave us a review. Thank you to Tins. Thank you to Stuart Hogg. We'll be back in 7 days' time with another fantastic guest. More clues via our social channels. In the meantime, it's all yours, Rob Brydon. And from us, bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.